This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Miguel Mike Benito Fernandez has made two long journeys in his life. The first came when he and his family were exiled from Cuba in 1964 with no warning and no money. They soon made New York City their home and faced a new path of challenges, opportunities, and lessons. The other journey came in 2013 when Fernandez made the 508-mile pilgrimage along El Camino de Santiago from France through Spain as a way to raise millions of dollars for the Miami Children's Hospital. He tells his story in a new book, Humbled by the Journey, Life Lessons for My Family and Yours. Today, Fernandez is a successful businessman and philanthropist who believes in the power of giving back to others. Mike, thanks for joining us today.
Mark, thank you for having me.
Now, why did you write your book? This is more than just a rags-to-riches story, isn't it?
Well, actually, I am a reluctant writer in a sense that my wife, who happens to be from Michigan, for 9 years tried to talk me into writing a book about my life as a result of her not knowing much about her grandparents. And she thought it would be a shame that my grandkids or great-grandchildren someday may ask about where I came from and where my parents came from, and they would not know. So it was a work in process for 9 years, and I kept saying no because I thought it would be all about vanity and ego. And that is just not me. I'm not into vanity nor ego. I think I'm very grounded, and I hope my children are too. But the book is a result of my wife's insistence, and then the blessing that our country has given me to work, fail and succeed at times, but more importantly, to give back to our country and to the community where I live.
Mike, you say you were worried about vanity. Is that why it was important to get the word humbled into the title of the book?
You know, many of my friends from very early on in childhood used to refer to me as the most boring guy in the group, and I kind of enjoy that title today because I think I'm laughing the loudest by being boring in life. But humble is important. I think being humble and grateful are probably two of life's greatest gifts to us. And gratitude is something that shows real humanity, humility, and it's a great part of being part of the human race.
What was life like for you as a child in Cuba?
Well, it was certainly different from my children's lives in the U.S. I remember late 1950s when I was about 8 or 9 years of age. I remember bodies floating in a river. I remember bullet shots and holes in my living room. It was not a happy childhood. I remember in 1959, at age 9, actually, being forced to watch an execution of a dentist who was tied up at the pitcher's mound at a public stadium. My sister was 7, and we were all made to watch. And it was a lesson that they were trying to teach everyone else in the country, that you had to play by their rules or there will be consequences. So life was challenging. On the other hand, it made me who I am today. I would not replace my experience and the hardships that I have lived for anything else in the world. They have made me very human. They have made me humbled, and they have made me, hopefully, a net contributor to mankind.
Your family was exiled from Cuba in 1964, or as you put it in the book, you were invited to leave. What led to your family's expulsion? What was that whole experience like?
Well, in 1959, the Cuban Revolution takes place with the Castro brothers and Che Guevara at the lead, and they are not as nice as some movies or pictures or stories tend them to pretend that they are. So I remember Christmas Eve 1969 that a truck pulled to our house. Some militiamen with Russian submachine guns came into the house and told us to get in the back of the truck. Now, we had no idea where we were going. I left the house in my PJs, so did my sister. My father did not have a penny to his name, not his wallet, not a visa, not a passport. And my father's crime was that he was a small businessman. And by small, I don't mean he owned a small hotel nor a small casino. My father owned a sandwich shop, and it was no more than 10 feet by 5 feet. But during that time, the Cuban government was confiscating all private businesses. And when they took his business, his little sandwich shop, he protested against the government, who had no right to do so, and obviously he lost. So he became considered to be a person that was not going to cooperate. And the Cuban government has at times taken the position that if it's almost like a pressure cooker, and if the pressure gets too hot or too high, it's better to let you out or push you out. So we were one of those families that was pushed out.
Now, President Obama is seeking to open up relations with Cuba, and critics are opposed to dealing with the Castro regime. Supporters say this is going to be an economic boost for all involved and force Cuba's government to change. What do you think? Is this a good idea?
You know, there's I will begin by saying this, that the U.S. government has not had diplomatic relationships with Cuba since for the last 50 plus years. I happen to have served in the U.S. Army. We lost 58,000 U.S. soldiers in Vietnam, and 15 years later, we had a diplomatic embassy in Vietnam. It's been 50-plus years since we stopped diplomatic relationships with Cuba. So I think it's about time. It is time that we turn that page, and history has been written. It is what it is, but we must explore other alternatives. And other alternatives are the dissemination of additional information that is so tightly controlled by the Cuban government for the Cuban people, and the establishment of small businesses that hopefully will allow someone to become independent from government. Many of your listeners may not know this, but in Cuba, until literally 2 years ago, everyone worked for the government. If I wanted to open a business, which, by the way, private businesses were not allowed, you had to ask the government to supply you with the workers. There is no such thing as applying for a job in Cuba at a private business. You have to go to the government in order to be assigned to that business.
When you first arrived in the U.S., Mike, what were the challenges that your family faced? Weren't you literally starting all over again?
Well, we did not speak the language to begin with. Even today at 62, I have an accent, which I'm very proud of. My wife is, as I said before, is from Michigan, and for years she thought I was European, but the last laugh was on her. I was not European. I happened to be Cuban. Some of the things that I missed the most was arriving in New York City and not seeing green everywhere. I lived in a small town in eastern Cuba. I lived in a small apartment above a bottle storage warehouse on a dirt street, and there was lushness and greenness everywhere. In New York City, I did not see that. So the culture was different. The language was a challenge. But if there's a will, there's a way. We live in a country that allows us the opportunity to make as many mistakes as we want to make, as long as we have the fortitude to get up and keep moving again. I have failed many times, yet when people talk about me, whether it's in local business papers or industry publications, they talk about my business success or the 25 companies that I've been able to build. Yet they forget that for every one of those companies, there were probably three or four that failed. This is a country that is very forgiving. So what is obvious to me as a foreigner is the greatness of our nation. And while living in Cuba was a beautiful childhood at a very early age, before I saw the bad things happen, living in the land of democracy is a much greater experience.
So you think failure is an important part of success, don't you?
I think failure is a necessary companion on the road to success. You know, could we say that failure is what they call the step before succeeding at something? I've never learned much from success, except that it builds the wrong side of the ego. I've learned everything I know from the times that I have failed.
Mike, a couple of years ago, you hiked hundreds of miles along the ancient trail El Camino to raise money for Miami Children's Hospital. Now, why did you pick that particular trail?
Well, El Camino, or The Way, actually there's a Martin Sheen movie called The Way that I learned about it after I did my first hike. Mark, I've done El Camino now three times, and I will do it the fourth time this June with my 11-year-old son. The first one I did with my daughter, the second one I did by myself, The third one with my wife, and the fourth one will be with my youngest son, who is 11. El Camino has been a path of pilgrimage and reflection for over 1,000 years, going back to the Middle Ages. It is a place where you find people from all walks of life and from all countries. I've met people from Scotland, Korea, Vietnam, Venezuela, Colombia, Argentina, Australia, South Africa. It is a place where people go because they're seeking something, or they're trying to deal with pain or the loss of someone, or just to, even some will go just to lose some weight, believe it or not. So it was a 508-mile walk. I walked for 32 days. I was sick for another 20. The weather did have an impact on me. And having had 2 heart attacks and cancer, it was a challenge. And every day I was challenged to quit, but I refused to accept. And the next morning I would just put on my backpack and take one more step.
How much money did you end up raising for the hospital by this walk?
Yeah, I think in 32 days we did $6.4 million.
Wow. And this was difficult for you, as you're saying. Do you know how many steps and how many miles? Well, it was 508 miles, but...
Well, yeah, you know, my wife gave me a little gadget that I would attach to my belt, so I know I did
a pedometer.
58,000. That's it, a pedometer. I did 58,000 steps per day.
Oh my gosh.
There were days in which I would only do, 9 miles because they were in the mountains, and there were days in which I would do 26, 27 miles in the plateaus. But the wonderful thing that you find along the way is the humanity in people, the humility in people. No one knows who you are. You're just a face. You could be the head of AT&T, or you could be the president of a country, or you could be a homeless person. You're all equal. And everyone is equally generous to you. It could be a bottle of water when you're thirsty, or a banana when someone sees you and gives it to you. Everyone is wonderful, and it reminds you, and it reminds me, how kind we are. But we forget it sometimes, living in the rat race that we live in from day to day. It is a wonderful experience.
Was this as difficult as the journey you made as a child, being exiled and moving to New York City? Are the two things even comparable?
You know, the exile to New York City was fearful. The fear of my parents' eyes on that airplane on the way out of Cuba, not knowing where we were going to land, and then having the airplane door open, and they said, get out, and find yourself in the country that you had no idea where you were. It happened to be Mexico City. We lived in Mexico for 6 months before we were allowed into the U.S. The trip in Spain was one that was mentally challenging as well as physically challenging, because the desire to quit is there every day. Let me not kid you. You have blisters on your feet. Sometimes those blisters are bleeding. You have a backpack that is heavy, and you're traveling a path that has been walked on by millions, has been walked on by Roman troops and French invaders, by all kinds of people. So you're literally walking history. I would say that El Camino was a breeze in comparison to my departure from Cuba.
Now, you served in the military. You mentioned that earlier, and one of your first jobs after you got out of the military was selling life insurance door-to-door. What lessons did you learn from that served you well later in life?
Well, a couple of things. While I was selling door-to-door life insurance, which is something I had never done before, perseverance, never give up. I remember the first week that I was doing it, it took going through a whole complex of apartments. There were about 600 units, and I had not sold one single policy, nor had gotten one single appointment after a week. And I was tempted to quit, but thinking back about what my father had to give up in order to bring me to this great country of ours, I could not let my father down. I could not quit. From the Army, what I learned was something that was equally as important as perseverance, and that was a sense of urgency. One of the times, of the 47 times that I jumped out of airplanes, my parachute did not open properly. So I was forced to open my reserve chute. And merely a few hundred feet above the ground, I was able to get it to catch wind. And I landed pretty hard, so I broke both of my ankles. Those ankles still are in pain today. I have 5 herniated discs, partly because of that fall. but it has never stopped me. And what the fact that I'm in pain or my back hurts has never stopped me from achieving my goals. And my goals gave me a sense that it's quite unusual. And it's all going back to the day when that parachute did not open. I became aware shortly thereafter that my life was not going to be forever. My life was terminal. And someday I was going to pass away, and I had no control as to what day that was going to be. It could have been in a week. It could have been in 30 years. So I developed a sense of urgency at everything I did. I never had a three-year business plan. I never even had a one-year business plan. I've always had seven-day plans. And I figured that if I can complete something in 7 days, if I can focus on the macro will develop itself. And that's probably why I've been so blessed in the businesses that I have built.
Mike, your book is geared around the importance of giving back to the community, especially in the areas of education, healthcare, and helping those in need. Why is philanthropy so important to you?
Because I was the recipient of philanthropy. I was the recipient of an adopted homeland. They gave me my home. I learned from many friends the importance of giving back to others. When you are a first-generation immigrant to this country, the natural tendency is to protect every penny that you make, is to build a war chest, per se, of capital. But what I found to be more rewarding than having capital was the ability to use that capital to do good. Look, we as a family have, over the last 25 years, given in excess of $100 million to great causes. And shortly, we will start funding about $100 million worth towards education. It is, has given me more joy than any sale that I've ever have enjoyed as a result of my business endeavors.
What has been the most rewarding experience helping someone that you've ever had?
You know, when I left for the Camino, I did it to raise money for this hospital. Yet while I was on the road in El Camino in Spain, I found causes to support. And one of them was reading a newspaper outside of the city of Pamplona, famed for the running of the bulls every year during the first week of July. And it talked about a child who was 5 years of age, and this little girl had a genetic disorder, and she could not swallow. I made it a point to find the writer, or actually find the newspaper, then find the writer. Then he took me to the hospital where this child was being treated, and then I was taken to the family home. I was able to help that child by sending her to a hospital in the U.S. So it comes in random ways. I've helped a child get a transplant, although she did not survive. She was given an extra 2 years of life. I've helped a child from Brazil, have her legs. She lost her legs in a fire when she was a baby in her crib, so having prosthetics where she was able to walk. But probably by far the most rewarding experience has been to see my children pick up my sense of giving back to those who really need it, those who are in need. Look, there are many who can help themselves, and we expect them to help themselves. When we as a family provide, for example, a scholarship, we do not fund 100% of it. We want that family or that individual to have some skin in the game. But there are some others that do need our help. And to see my children stepping into my shoes is probably the most rewarding thing that I've done.
So your belief is in creating opportunity. Is that right?
My belief is creating opportunity, help those who are willing to help themselves, and those who cannot help themselves, help them because it's the right thing to do. I do believe that we have an obligation to step ahead of ourselves, set challenges that are hard to achieve. I have failed at every single thing that I've ever set out to do. I have failed at every business that I've set out to do because I've never reached the goals that I set out. But in that process, I created a lot of great things.
Proceeds from your book are going to the Early Childhood Initiative Foundation. Tell us about that organization.
Well, the Early Childhood Initiative is run by the former publisher of the Miami Herald and the Detroit Free Press. His name is David Lawrence. And this man in his retirement decided that he had an obligation beyond running newspapers, and he has a great heart. And he felt that providing education and training to children before they get into pre-K or kindergarten was very important. More than 50% of what a child learns, of what a human learns in their lifetime, is learned by the time they're age five. So in trying to help that educational process, teachers, educational programs, as well as establishing programs in established schools, is what the Early Childhood Initiative is all about. It is an incredible good source of information for teachers to reach out to, for families to look into, and they're doing an incredible job. But there are so many charities out there that it's hard to find one that is doing exactly what you want them to do. I have found that helping with children's causes does everything I want someone to do for our human race.
What's the big message that you want people to take away from your book?
I want them to make sure that they take care of those who come after them. That has been something that I've tried to focus in my own life and my family. Take care of those who come after you. If you focus on helping others, great things will happen to you. So leave the world a better place than what you found it. Look, I've been called by my Democratic friends a Neanderthal Republican. I am called by my Republican friends the largest Democratic donor that they have. So I do what's right. I am party agnostic, and I do what is right. But I think helping others and leaving a good legacy by taking care of others who follow us is a lesson worth learning and worth living.
Mike, thank you so much for talking to us this afternoon.
Mark, thank you so much for having me.
Miguel Mike Benito Fernandez, his new book is Humbled by the Journey, Life Lessons for My Family and Yours. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Rick Andres. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU.